2020 Borough Assembly Candidates Forum. Tonight we'll be hearing from candidates for the Borough Assembly. The forum is being broadcast live on KMXT 100.1 FM and streamed on the Borough's website. Today's forum will be broken into three parts. Candidates will have 1 minute to give an opening statement. Then we'll move into questions, which will be asked by KMXT reporter Jared Griffin and Kodiak Daily Mirror reporter Andrew Kennison. The first candidate to answer the first question will be the last to answer the second question, and so on. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond to the question. Finally, each candidate will have 1 minute at the end to give a closing statement. Before we begin with the candidates who are present today, I do have a note I would like to pass along from candidate Sandra Kotelnikoff-Lester. She had surgery yesterday and asked us to pass along on her behalf that she appreciates people's continued support, and for their support she would be grateful. So she has been unable to attend tonight. Two of our candidates, because of a variety of reasons, are present via video conferencing tonight. So in the room we have four candidates and two online. As a reminder, candidates must stop speaking when the timer sounds, and we ask that all candidates maintain a civil, courteous demeanor throughout the forum. Before we begin, I'll ask our reporters to introduce themselves.
I'm Jared Griffin from KMXT.
And I'm Andrew Kennison from the Kodiak Daily Mirror.
We will be going in alphabetical order for our There it goes. Okay, we will be going in alphabetical order for opening statements. So we'll start with Joseph. Could you please give us your opening statement? Joseph, are you there?
We'll see if he catches up on the Zoom, or we'll try and contact him in the interim here, but let's move on to the next one.
Okay, Julie, give us your opening statement.
Yes, thank you, and good evening. Also, thank you, Mike, for moderating tonight's candidate forum. I appreciate it. I'd like to begin by saying it has been an honor to serve on the Borough Assembly for the last 3 years. Since filing for re-election, the question most often asked is why. This simple question has layers and layers of answers, but here is the basic answer. My motivation hasn't changed. I intend to continue work on maintaining a stable tax rate, simplifying government, and ensuring transparency.
Okay.
There are variables in play that will affect outcomes, such as school bond debt, resource values and landings, infrastructure needs, consolidation, administration, COVID-19, and more. But the three overarching things are the foundation and basis for the decisions I have and will continue to make as an assembly member.
Thank you. Next, Alex, please give us your opening statement.
Hello, this is Alex Hartman, running for Borough Assembly. I've lived here in Kodiak for 41 years, been active on a Native Corporation board for 8 years, and that's where I gather politics from on a personal level. And I'd like to, the reason why I'm running is to make a difference in this town and city. And thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you. Jeff, you up next.
Yeah, good evening, thank you. My name is Jeff Smith, and I spell that with a G. My mom calls me Jeffrey. I have two brothers. They refer to me as Goof, Gee-off, G-off, anything but Jeff. So I've learned over the course of my life to respond to a lot of different names. Growing up, I kind of moved all over the country. I had a parent who really liked changing his jobs, and so we had a chance to live on the East Coast, overseas, and finally settled in Oregon. Spent our summers in northern Wisconsin at my grandfather's cabin. And I grew to appreciate the rain and the trees and the outdoors and nature by spending my youth in those two environments. I will tell you, I'm a Kodiak transplant. I moved here 24 plus years ago. I got off the ferry, had never seen the island before, and realized that I had found what I am now calling my home and has been my home and will remain my home. This is the place for me. I enjoy everything Kodiak has to offer, hunting, fishing, outdoors.
Thank you. Next we have Rebecca. Please give us your opening statement.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Skinner. I was born and raised in Kodiak and went off island for college, law school, and business school. I returned to the island most recently in 2013 and have served on the Borough Assembly since 2014. I'm running for the Assembly because Kodiak is my home. I care about the future of the community, and I think I can make a difference in these challenging times. The biggest and most immediate issue facing the borough is the budget, both at the state and local level. This year, the state is not reimbursing the borough for bond debt payments. They used to reimburse 70% of our bond debt, which is over $5.2 million per year. Without that state reimbursement, the borough has to come up with that $5.2 million from somewhere else. And that size of budget gap has a huge impact, so prioritization and careful planning is critical. Other issues I think are important for the Assembly are consolidation, effective borough operations in times of COVID, while maintaining transparency and public access to information and meeting forums,
Thank you. Amy, please give us your opening statement.
Good evening. My name is Amy Williams. I'd like to start by saying thanks to KMXT for organizing the forum tonight and making accommodations for me to join via Zoom. We had some unexpected, closer than comfortable contacts with the active COVID cases in my office, so we're just playing it safe. I'm running for the Borough Assembly this term because I see an opportunity to use my talents to help boost the quality of life that we have here in Kodiak and strive for better communications and efficiency in the borough. Through my work as Executive Director of Discover Kodiak and as the Vice President of the Kodiak Economic Development Corporation, I've been very lucky to get to know business owners from all over the archipelago, and these relationships have really opened my eyes in understanding their needs and what their desires are for the future of the borough. I've lived in Kodiak for about 8 years. We're looking forward to spending more time here in retirement. Well, my husband is the one that's going to be retiring. I plan on working for a while longer. Actually, I feel like I'm just getting started in my career path, and I think this is an important step in it. I look forward to getting to know the other candidates tonight because I haven't met all of them. And if elected, I look forward to representing our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving ahead to the questions. Do we have Joseph Delgado on? Julie, this one's for you. You'll start. The City of Kodiak's representative on the Consolidation Committee recently quit the committee, and city leaders said he would not be replaced. Do you support continuing to investigate consolidation of the city and borough governments, and how would you involve the city in consolidation talks?
All right. Is that better?
Great. I will repeat the question.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry for that.
The City of Kodiak's representative on the Consolidation Committee recently quit the committee, and city leaders said he would not be replaced. Do you support continuing to investigate consolidation of the city and borough governments? How would you continue to involve the city in consolidation talks?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. The short answer is yes. I do support continuing the review of consolidation. The borough's consolidation committee is charged with investigating consolidation by filling out a petition. At the end of that process, they are tasked with making recommendations on whether to move forward, as well as providing the pros and cons of consolidation. I believe the merits of potential consolidation are significant enough to support the continuing work. If the committee recommends consolidation, it has the potential to benefit all of Kodiak. It differs in this way from annexation. Annexation would only benefit the city and the newly acquired areas. Consolidation is the only action that lifts barriers to all residents and by providing potential expansion of services when a district desires it, and consolidation extends government representation to the entire island population. It will go a long way to relieve the confusion on which entity is responsible for a service with dual layers of government. I've recently spoke with the mayor and at a work session about the city's representation. We will hopefully be making the seat made vacant by the city council member an at-large seat, but we will retain a seat for a city official so that they can participate at any time. The consolidation committee met last night, and we were happy to receive council member John Whitten via phone for that meeting.
Alex, same question to you.
I'm for consolidation, and I don't know much about it. I'll tell you the truth right up. And I do know that if both governments and entities aren't working together for the future of Kodiak, it could be not very cohesive for the economy and other things as well. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff, same question to you.
Yeah, I would have to say I would support consolidation. I don't have all the facts, but I think one of your questions asked what would we do when you look at your city representative who has removed themselves from that committee, and in order for us to be able to have that kind of communication, we actually have to be able to communicate with one another. So I would explore the options or ask the borough manager as appropriate to explore the options as to where the breakdown occurred so that those discussions can be ongoing, which will lead us towards some resolution. Otherwise, you've got a committee that is missing a key player at the table. So thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca, same question.
Thank you. So I do think that the work on consolidation should continue to move forward. And first of all, I hope that the city reconsiders and chooses to send a city representative to the committee. This issue was put before the Kodiak voters several years ago, and there was a majority of voters across the entire borough, as well as if you just look at the city voters within the city limits, that did want consolidation looked into. So I think that we have a vote from the people asking the borough to look at this. We are well into the process of looking into it, well over halfway, and that we really need to continue going over the evaluation. If the city does not reconsider and doesn't put forward another representative, I expect that the borough should be keeping the city in the loop by sending meeting notices and minutes. And the city, in order to go through the evaluation process, they're a key player as far as information sharing. So either way, they should be involved somewhat in the process. But I would expect or hope that the borough continues to encourage them to participate, because that's really going to give us the best result as we go through this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy, same question to you.
Thank you, Andrew. I feel like the consolidation is a process that should absolutely keep on going. It could be something that's very good for the borough, for island-wide. The fact that the city withdrew its representative, I have a feeling that that's going to be temporary and that they'll come back to the table because they are such an important part of it. I did attend the consolidation meeting last night just to see where they were in the process and try to learn some information about that. And I think it's a much bigger process than anyone thinks. And that committee is doing a great job with a lot of different members from the community trying to wrap their heads around everything that's involved with that. So I think that process should absolutely continue. And I guess I reserve my right to say whether I'm pro or against consolidation to wait and find out what that committee finds out and have more numbers. I think everyone wants to see a more efficient government and something with less layers. But I also want to ensure that all of those same services are able to be provided by that one centralized government. So I guess time will tell on what that committee will recommend to the borough, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you.
All right. Next question we will be asking Alex first. So the borough has held and maintained the facilities fund since selling Shuyak Island to the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council in 1995 and used the interest payments to meet various obligations over the years. Additionally, the borough is obligated to pay over $5 million in bond debt next fiscal year. Proposition number one asks voters if they will allow the borough to take from the principal of the facilities fund instead of using interest to pay bond debt. So the question is, will you vote for Proposition 1? And if voters approve Proposition 1, would you support using the facilities fund to pay bond debt? And if not, how would you close that gap?
I do, in a way, support Proposition 1 as a last resort. There has to be other solutions that have not yet been discovered to these problems that have been created in the past by either outside entities or inside entities. But I do believe there is a solution. Instead of trying to raid and get into the fund, I've seen this happen before in other situations with corporations going under, and you give them access to funds and then all of a sudden there's nothing left. That's a good concern there, and I don't know all the facts of where we could possibly go in a different direction at this time. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's see, same question for Jeff.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I attended a borough assembly meeting last spring, and I listened to the assembly members talk about the budget and look at the budget, and there was discussion about whether this would even make it onto the ballot or not, or whether we should tap into the principal of this fund or continue to rely on its earnings and the interest earnings of it. And one of the things that stood out to me, and I think one of the things that motivated me to step up and get involved, besides the fact that I care about the community we all live in, as most of you and all of you in this room do as well, is the comment that we are continuing to kick a can down the road. And that stood out to me because I feel like, you know what, we've kicked this can for a long time, and now it's kind of like the rubber band is stretched as far as we can stretch a rubber band. And we've kind of waited until we're at this moment where we have to make a decision. How are we going to continue to fund and afford the services that we all enjoy? And so am I for pulling the principal? Am I against pulling the principal? I don't have an answer for that tonight. I can tell you that I think we've got to look at the big picture and say, how are we going to fund what it is we need to fund? And how are we going to fulfill all of our obligations? Are there other options out there for revenue? Absolutely. Have we looked at all of those options? Not necessarily. I think once you tap into the principle of any fund, that rainy day account is only going to continue to decrease. Your interest earnings off of that in future years are going to be less. It you know, I think it'll be interesting to see where the voters go. But I still think at the end of the day, we've got to find a long-term solution to our financial needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question, Rebecca.
Do you mind repeating the very last part of the
Absolutely.
Question?
Absolutely. Let's see. If voters approve Proposition 1, would you support using the facilities fund to pay bond debt? And if not, how would you close that gap?
Thank you. I like to have options. I think trying to create as many options to use across a array of situations is really valuable. I which is partly why I was one of the co-sponsors of bringing this proposition forward to the people. Generally, I tend to be on the more fiscally conservative side, which should come as no surprise if you listen to borough meetings. However, during the budget process this last year, there, you know, I recognize and there was acknowledgement among the assembly members that this year with COVID it would have been a very challenging year to raise the mill rate for taxpayers because so many people with the shutdowns, they weren't going to work or the businesses weren't operating. So having access to the principal of the facilities fund gives the assembly options to meet that budget gap of the $5.2 million that used to be reimbursed by the state. Would I consider using the principal if this was approved by the voters? Of course, because it's an option. It's a tool on the table. Would that be my first choice? No, it would not. But we have to pay our debt. That's not an option. And if we don't have a way or we don't have the time to raise revenue from other sources, we have to pay our debt. And $5.2 million is a big number. I think it would be very challenging to bring on another source of revenue that would give you $5 million in 1 year. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question, Amy.
Thank you. I agree with a lot of things that Rebecca just said, actually. I would vote yes on Proposition 1, and I would do so because the way that it is worded is that it limits it to $3.1 million each year, and it gives the borough assembly the option to use that each year for 5 years. So until these other revenue sources are investigated and we can figure out what the actual options are, it gives us the ability to use that, but it doesn't force us to use that. It would let us actually have time to investigate other sources, but it would also allow us to perhaps not raise the mill rate significantly to cover that right away. So I think that's an important distinction. If the voters vote yes on that, it doesn't mean that the assembly has to do that. It just gives them the option. In this case, options are key. Thanks.
Okay, and for Julie.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to preface my comments with the fact that, you know, for the listening audience, I feel like the Facilities Fund is an investment fund, and the borough utilizes the interest on the fund every year. And therefore, reducing the principal reduces the amount of interest available for use. I supported the initiative going on the ballot because over the past 2 years, there's been conversation about using the principal. And in code, we're supposed to ask the voters before we use that principal. We did get a legal opinion that said that we could borrow from that principal without a voter vote, without voters weighing in. And I personally had a problem with that. I think that I felt like that was a go around. And so I appreciated the initiative because it did the right thing. It's asking the voters whether or not we should use the principal for bond debt. I also support the idea that it limits the amount of usage each year to $1.3 million over 5 years, and that even if it does pass, it doesn't mean that the assembly has to utilize that money unless we're wedged into a corner. over $5 million is a huge gap. I don't have an answer for how we're going to bridge that gap this next year. This last year was very difficult. We reduced educational funding. We reduced nonprofit funding. We did a lot of cutting. And we can't do the same things that we did this year, year after year. And we have another 4 or 5 years of sustained debt at this level. So with that being said, I personally do not agree with using the principle of the facilities fund. And I personally won't vote for that.
Thank you. Hold on just a second. We do have a 1 minute follow-up question to this question about budget gaps, specifically in regard to bridging budget gaps. What, and we'll go back to Alex first. What are your initial proposals or ideas in regards to either increasing revenue or exploring further cuts to borough services?
Well, there is definitely different options out there that I know about a little bit. I mean, we can impose a tax on tobacco, higher tax. I mean, there are options. I just don't have enough facts on the subject at hand right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Absolutely. In regards to bridging budget gaps, how would you propose to either increase revenues or versus, you know, exploring further cuts to borough services?
Yeah, thank you. You know, working in the school district for a number of years, I've had the opportunity to work through the budget process numerous times and have been involved in that process. And I think that this process is going to be similar in terms of looking at, it isn't gonna be a one size fits all. There's not gonna be one answer to where we're at right now. But I think we've gotta look at what is the budget currently, where are the areas in that budget that there is room to reduce if we need to reduce. And I think we've got to look at all of our options for increasing revenue that becomes sustainable for us. But then I think more importantly in all of that is that we've got to learn to live within our means, and we have to learn to live with what we have that's on the table. I don't have the answer tonight. I can tell you that I will listen and I will seek that out, and I will find the answer, and I will get educated in what I need to be educated in.
Okay, and Rebecca, your thoughts on this balancing of revenue and cuts?
Thank you. I think that to bridge the gap of the $5.2 million is going to take a mix of cuts and increased revenue. On the increased revenue side, we have increasing existing taxes, including tobacco, marijuana tax, and the mill rate. Those would be big areas, as well as severance tax, which is tied to the mill rate. On the cost side, I do think it's important for the assembly and the public to understand that when you're talking about the mill rate revenue, that basically goes to four buckets. It goes to pay our debt, it goes to support education, it goes into the general fund, and then it goes to take care of our buildings. And this last year, we put $0 toward the buildings, and only $800,000 went into the general fund. So even if we cut all of the tax revenue out of the general fund, that's not going to fix the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And for Amy, your thoughts.
I think most of the answers have already been given on this, so I'm not going to have anything to present that's new, but I think that we're going to have a combination of cuts to services, working at making the services we do provide more efficient, look at possibly borrowing And then we're going to have to look at taxes on tobacco, possibly marijuana, and the mill rate. It's going to be a combination of that. And then start looking at out-of-the-box stuff about the way that we zone stuff, possible land sales. And just like some of the other people have said, I am not an expert in this area, but obviously we're going to have a large learning curve in trying how to bridge that gap. Thank you.
And Julie.
Yeah, thank you. So I think everybody's pretty much already said that there's no clear answer. I have been steadfast that our local residents need a stable tax rate to depend on, and that provides the ability for individuals and local businesses to remain invested in our economy. That being said, we have avoided a mill rate increase for multiple years, and I think that that's going to have to be looked at. It's been a conversation for the last 3 years, and it will continue to be a conversation. I hope that if, as elected, I would influence that remain as low as possible. But in reality, other taxes that aren't associated with the mill rate are going to be very small amounts in the buckets that we need for the gap that we have to bridge. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Jeff, you will go first on this one. For this year's education appropriation, the Kodiak Island Borough School District asked for $10.4 million, and after entertaining different amounts proposed by assembly members, the Borough Assembly settled on $9.4 million, a decrease of about $1 million over last year. So how do you prioritize a fully funded education system for Kodiak?
Well, for full disclosure purposes, I do work for the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I've been an employee of theirs for, this is my 25th year, so I certainly want to put that out there up front. If you ask me if I believe one of our most critical functions of the borough is funding education, I'm going to tell you, yes, it is. Do I think the children of our community are our most valuable investment? I'm going to tell you, yes, they are. I do bring with me the knowledge and the background of budgets and budget developments and prioritizing the needs of students. The children, the youth of this community are our future in this community. And how we support them today and how we invest in them today is what's going to pay dividends for the longevity of our community and going into the future. You know, when I moved here 24 years ago and I looked at education and I looked at the funding and I look at our budget there and I look at our budget today, yes, it's gone up. 24 years later, it has gone up. It has to be our priority. As a borough defined as a second-class borough, it is outlined as one of our major priorities. So realizing that we cut the school district by the amount of money that we cut the school district by, that results in cuts in staff, personnel, materials, supplies, resources that are needed for the education of our youth. The needs of the students in our community have changed drastically in the last 24 years. They're going to continue to change as society changes. And I do believe that needs to be one of our priorities, and that we need to look at that and say, how are we going to fund education? Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Thank you. I think this question really emphasizes the importance of having sustainable budgeting. Part of the reason why you have a decrease of $1 million is because the previous year, the assembly voted to add $500,000 to the school budget using one-time fish tax revenue. So we had an unusually large year of fish tax revenue. It was over $1 million. And at least half of that was then allocated toward education. While that may seem good in that year, the problem, which you saw this last budget cycle, is that using one-time funding creates holes the next budget year when you don't have that money anymore. So I think that from a prioritization standpoint, it is important for the assembly to understand what its priorities are as far as funding, and then use the most stable sources of revenue to fund those priorities. I would view property taxes as the most stable source of revenue. Fish taxes can go up and down depending on what's happening with the fish stocks. Did we have a warm blob that killed off the baby fish? What are the fish prices? Do we have a COVID pandemic that's driving down markets in China? So there's lots of reasons fish taxes go up and down. The property taxes are much more stable. So I do think education is very important. And from an education standpoint and a borough standpoint, I think we really need to focus on having a stable budget and stable funding so that we're not creating big ups and downs for the borough or for education or for our debt service or for taking care of our buildings. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy?
Would you mind repeating the question, please?
Of course. For this year's education appropriation, the Kodiak Allen Borough School District asked for $10.4 million. And after entertaining different amounts proposed by assembly members, the Borough Assembly settled on $9.4 million, a decrease of about $1 million over last year. So how do you prioritize a fully funded public education system for Kodiak?
Thank you. I absolutely do support education through our school system and also through workforce development. I think that these are the things that we're going to offer that are going to bring families back to the island and keep them here. So that is extremely important. Our schools offer education in a lot of different things that people can stay here on the island and continue to work and make a life. And so just like Jeff said, I feel like that's important. Our community expects and deserves a certain level of service from the school district, and they should get it. I think that $1 million decrease is just a result that all facets of the budget had to bear the burden of that unexpected debt coming back to the borough with the school bond. And it's our job to make sure that the schools don't bear more than their fair share of that debt as we move forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Julie?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I personally believe that supporting education is our number one priority. I also believe that if you look at the numbers, we prove and show that that is our number one priority. We funded the school operating budget $9.4 million and the school bond debt approximately $8 million, which means that we supported the school function at about a tune of $17 million, which is above the entire mill rate revenue that we receive. So I support education. I think that the assembly has continued to support education. When we have to take on a bond debt in total of $8 million, when we expected only to have to pay about $2.4 million of that debt, it creates a huge gap. There was also decrease in numbers of children that attended school locally. There's a lot of factors involved in decisions that I made in regards to educational funding. And it's just the cold, hard facts that when you have decreased revenues and increased liabilities, you have to look at every aspect of the budget and make cuts throughout. And that's really it. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex?
Yes, I support education, and it's a big integrity of any society. If you have good education, you're going to have better people in society that are thinking better, and but you going into this, we need to strategize how everything is going to be paid for, and that involves a lot of research on everybody's part, and it's an interesting thing when you can find out. You don't have to invent the wheel. You can find out what other boroughs around the state are doing for their debt. And that's just one idea, and it might not work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. 1 minute follow-up on this question. Kodiak Allen Borough funding to nonprofits has been cut over the past few years, and the fallout of COVID-19 has revealed the valuable public service and economic impact of nonprofits in our community. How would you prioritize borough support for community nonprofits? We'll start with Rebecca. No. Sorry, Jeff.
You threw me a curve, but so could I get you to repeat the very last part of that question?
Sure. How would you prioritize borough support for community nonprofits?
Thank you. I think our nonprofits are critical to our community. They provide a lot of services and a lot of supports to a lot of families that are in need, and I think that that is only increasing. And I think that has to be a priority in terms of how do we support the members in our community that are needing the services that are being provided by the nonprofits, and the way we do that is by supporting the nonprofits. It just has to become a priority for us. I do want to circle back, if I could, for a moment. When we talked about decreased enrollment in the school, and it ties into what you're asking right now, is that that doesn't mean that the need of our student is decreasing. Like, that doesn't correlate. And I think that holds true in the community with our nonprofits as well, that the funding for the nonprofits are supporting the families that are in need right now. And I think that needs to continue and become a priority for the borough. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Thank you. So my approach to budgeting is that you really need to start with the expenditures that you have to make. And for the borough, those include paying our debt, which is, let's round it up, $9 million, supporting education, let's say round number $9 million, and taking care of our borough buildings. That includes this building. It includes all of the school buildings. Annually, borough buildings at a minimum should be getting, $2 million set aside to take care of borough buildings. If you add up 9 plus 9 plus 2, you get $20 million, and clearly that far exceeds the amount that we collect in property tax. Now, property tax isn't our only source of revenue. We get shared revenue through the federal government, through the state. We have severance tax. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy?
It is my personal thought that nonprofits are the foundation of the quality of life here, and that people don't truly appreciate them until they're in a place where they need them. I'm a big supporter of nonprofits. I've worked for two nonprofits. I feel like that is something that is directly related to keeping people here and getting kids to come back from college and raise families here, which then in turn returns revenue back to the borough and the city. So, when we look at essential things, I find that I lean way more to nonprofits being essential more than unnecessary. Thanks.
Thank you. Julie?
Yeah, thank you. Nonprofits are an important aspect of Kodiak Island's quality of life, and I firmly believe that. The Borough Assembly has worked really hard to spread the funds that are available to nonprofits as fairly as possible. We have in place prioritized nonprofits that that deliver services that are well in the definition of what the borough services are supposed to be, and those include health services and educational and other things like that. So I look at nonprofit funding as funding ones that provide essential services first. We have, other than that, to be completely honest, when we're in a budget crisis, I look very closely at how much money is in the nonprofit thing, but I feel like we've already cut it so bare that it can't be cut anymore.
Thank you. Alex?
I don't have much knowledge on the subject, but I am supportive of essential nonprofits. And thank you for the comment.
Thank you.
Okay, on this next question, we will begin with, I think we got a little, with Rebecca first. What is the Borough Assembly's role in helping to diversify Kodiak's economy? And how will you work to build Kodiak's economic future?
Thank you. So the Assembly's role or government's role with economic development and industry is, in my opinion, really focused on regulations and from a borough perspective, land use regulation or zoning that helps encourage and support business development or business diversification. I do not think that government does business well itself, so I don't see the borough as the leader going out and itself creating economic development. But the Assembly does have a role and a responsibility to understand Kodiak's economic drivers, to protect those. So Kodiak is a commercial fishing town. We don't want to hurt commercial fishing. At the same time, we do need to understand what other economic drivers are and do what we can to support those activities and allow them to grow. And, you know, hopefully the community will grow and we'll have a bigger tax base, a more vibrant community. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question for Amy.
Thank you. As far as diversification, I think that the borough does a good job working with tourism. I think that they did some very good work in getting money to small businesses and nonprofits through the CARES Act money recently. So I'm very thankful for that. And I think that's helped diversify and keep those businesses afloat during these hard times. I agree with Rebecca in her land use and zoning comments. I think those are very important ways that the borough can encourage new businesses. And of course, supporting commercial fishing and keeping advocates online and being ready to testify for all of their needs, I think is very important. And also, I think as we expand our shipyard, our boatyard, stuff like that, having support from the borough as we try to reach out and get more business into those kind of things will help our ports and harbors in the future, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question for Julie.
Yeah, thank you. Economic development. I think that along with land use and zoning and regulation should also include land availability. And I think that the borough could look at ways to make more land available. I know the state has been having a conversation about divesting land that they feel like is no longer necessary for them to hold. And I think that the borough could look at acquiring some of those plots of land. Business needs a place to flourish, and land is a high, highly sought after. There's very few industrial lands available anymore on the market. I don't think there's any at this point. So that would be something that we probably should look closer at. And I truly believe that simplifying borough code, getting rid of unused or unnecessary code will encourage economic development. I think that we could look at incentives for businesses. I don't have a definition of what I think that is, but I think we could have a conversation about incentives to encourage business growth or investment. And I am a strong proponent of commercial fishing since my family is 100% dependent on commercial fishing for its income. So I advocate for those for that industry a lot in my spare time. Thank you.
All right, next, Alex, diversifying Kodiak's economy.
Well, to diversify, first off, the borough's main concern and number one priority should always be education. And everything else follows afterwards. To diversify is a very good way of creating more business opportunities for freeing up land around this town and to simplify the codes. It is sometimes very hard for people to start new businesses because of a simple code rule that's in the way. I look at Anchorage, for instance. Their codes aren't as strict as Kodiak's, and that's, again, researching into what other boroughs are doing. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Jeff.
Yeah, I think a lot of the comments have been made in the room right now. I think the one thing that stands out to me as we look at diversifying economic development is the overall increase in quality of life for the residents of our community. And so the actions that we take, whether that's through land use, zoning, as Alex indicated, freeing up land, those are all things that add to quality of life for individuals. And have the potential for new business development. I also think we need to look at the sustainability of the services that we have. I'm a commercial fisherman. I have a set net site up in Bristol Bay, and the fishing industry is very important, and I think we need to be very supportive of that industry still, and that is really our backbone. The other thing that I think about when I think about diversity is the inclusiveness of all voices in our community. And I think one thing that will help drive what economic development we encounter or we engage in is making sure that all voices of our community actually are represented in some of those conversations and getting insights from folks from within our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Amy will start. Citizens in outlying villages sometimes feel like they're not included in decision-making processes. How will you involve villages in borough decisions?
Thank you for the question. Through working with the Kodiak Economic Development Corporation, I found that it was very hard to get a hold of those businesses to let them know that grants were even available. I have a membership at Discover Kodiak that gave me access to some, but not nearly all. I found that literally you have to Google search, get online, and I entered messages into people's contact boxes on their websites, letting them know that those grants were available just for outreach. So when we want them to get involved, we're going to have to work overtime. Of course, they have local governments that we can get a hold of and try to contact their leaders. And I think that's the most obvious way to get a hold of those governments. But I think letting the people know that we care and that we want to connect is going to take more than just contacting the mayor of a certain village and letting them know. I think we're going to have to work overtime to let them know that we want them to be involved. Thanks.
Thank you. Julie?
Yeah, on this question, I think that the real answer is outreach, personal outreach to individuals in those outlying areas. When we had the hunker down aspect of COVID-19, I was doing a lot of research and looking in online, trying to figure out what was going on and keep myself informed. And then it dawned on me, if it was that hard for me to get information and figure things out, that the people in the villages were probably wondering what was going on, not just across the nation or across the world, but maybe they didn't really know what was happening inside of their own hub, which is, I consider, Kodiak. And so I reached out to those communities. My question was simply, what do you need? Do you have everything you have, everything you could possibly have? And if not, what is it that you want? And most of them just wanted information. Simple things like, what are the businesses doing? How do we get services? Is there a compiled list of what those businesses are doing so that we can call them on the right days, or are they even open? And it was real simple things like that they wanted. I was able to pass that information on to the EOC, and I hope I hope after being reelected that I can continue to outreach to those communities.
Thank you. Alex?
I think communication to all the villages and different communities around Kodiak Island is a big key part of it, outreach, and possibly even maybe creating a seat for each village here at the Borough Assembly so their voices can be heard and they can have a better opinion and get some dialogue going. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff?
Yeah, I think it comes back to communication as being one of the most critical pieces, but I also would be interested in exploring the potential of like an advisory board. Is there a way to include some of our leaders from our rural communities in those discussions or in work sessions and getting input from them as well in terms of the things that are happening in their communities and the things that are happening in the city of Kodiak? And I think that it's got to be more than just individual outreach. I think it has to be a concerted effort by all members of the assembly and borough manager. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Thanks. I really appreciate this question because it gives me a chance to put a plug in for the Borough Mayors Conference. So the Borough Mayors Conference is something that that used to happen. I don't think it's happened since I've been on the assembly, but it's basically a conference of all of the village mayors hosted by the borough mayor. And back in the day, it was an in-person meeting, so everybody flew into Kodiak. And that provided a structure which brought together the municipal leaders of the different communities, and it was an opportunity for information sharing and creating and maintaining those connections. I think that overall having that structure, so building the infrastructure so that this conference is happening on an annual basis or more frequently, and also having an element of personal outreach is important, but I wouldn't want to build the whole system just on personal outreach because as people change, then things fall through the cracks. If you have more of a structure, that's important. And I think that right now the increased use of Zoom meetings is a great opportunity because it's really normalized virtual meetings. And the thing is, flying people in from the villages is challenging with weather. It's a time commitment to be away from the village. And so if we can utilize Zoom as a tool and get the Borough Mayors Conference going again, I think that that's a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I think we're back with Julie. Let's see. All right, so Julie, you'll go first. Supporting local businesses is paramount to a successful local economy. As the borough petitions bids for infrastructure repairs and updates, general supply purchases, and employment solicitation, at what priority do you feel local businesses should be awarded contracts, even if they are not the lowest bid?
So thank you for the question, Jared. We've had this come up several times in the last 3 years that I've been on the assembly, and several times we have awarded contracts to local bidders, even though they weren't the lowest bidder. There's a percentage, and it escapes me right now. But the way I see it is that especially when a contract is of a small scale, and that percentage represents an amount that the word insignificant doesn't really fit, but I mean a smaller amount of money. Let me say like maybe under $20,000 or $25,000. I think it's more beneficial to the local economy to award that contract to the local contractor because that money gets passed around and recirculated within the community. Once you get to a larger contract where that percentage represents a large number that would impact our finances more significantly, I have to look at that a little differently.
You're listening to KMXT Kodiak.
Okay, thank you. Alex.
I think keeping small projects to the contractors in this town is a great economic drive because it does keep the money here, tends to keep it here, more closer to home. And if bigger bids come up and the local contractors are right within the range of other bids, I don't have a problem with that. It creates more work for local people. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jeff, same question.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm all for supporting local businesses, but I would hope that the borough has a process or a procedure in place right now for when they go out of house for services, right? So if you're looking for a request for a proposal or an RFP process, I would hope that they have that established with the criteria that already indicates, do we award extra points or extra percentages for a local business versus an out-of-town business? But I would encourage the borough, if they don't, to certainly embrace that idea of coming up with a process for that where it's well established, where it's clear to all individuals or businesses that are looking to do work for the borough. I think that if what your goal is to come away with saying we want to be able to support our local businesses more than an outside vendor when it comes to services like that, then you look at that process and you establish that process and that procedure and outline it in terms of how you score that out based on awarding more points to a local business, if that's our priority, as I believe it should be. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Rebecca.
Thanks. So I'm going to assume with your question that we are following the current borough code. So we do have procedures for bidding, procurement, and we do have provisions for local hire, I'll call it preference. So typically the borough is required to go, well, we require ourselves to go with the lowest responsible bidder. So it can't be, the bid can't clearly not meet the needs of the project. But we want to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. So we do have the low bidder requirement. If there's a local candidate, I want to say their bid can be 7% higher than the lowest bidder, and they can still be awarded the bid. So we do have processes in place. I'm a strong supporter of awarding to local bidders. I think I maybe have a little bit less concern about the larger projects. I think if there's a local bidder that can do the larger project and it's still within the, again, I think it's 7%. If they're within the 7%, then I think if they can do the job, then it's important to keep the borough dollars on the island and give our local businesses more business. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Amy.
I think the nail has kind of been hit on the head on this one already. Local bidders just result in circulation of those monies staying on the island, and I think that's really powerful. The full disclosure, I am director of Discover Kodiak, so I am in charge of a lot of folks who have vacation rentals and car rentals. So when we do bring outside people in, that works out good for my tourism-based businesses as well, because they require accommodations and rental cars and entertainment and beer, stuff like that, that they stay, and so their money gets fed that way. That has actually saved some of our businesses this summer when there were a lack of tourists having those folks on the island. So that's something to look at too. But I think the preference, if it works out, should always go to local companies and keep the money on the island. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Alex will go first. At the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, many Kodiak businesses were left scrambling to stay up to date on statewide and community mandates and requirements. Going forward, what role should the borough play in handling COVID-19 fallout in Kodiak's small business sector?
Well, really, the role of the borough should be whatever. I'm no doctor myself, and we should actually do the research into the effects of this and what our doctors, local doctors, and even national doctors say about this disease, so we can effectively work with the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff?
Yeah, I hate to do this to you, but could you repeat the question again, please?
Of course. At the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, many Kodiak businesses were left scrambling, attempting to stay up to date on statewide and community mandates and requirements. Going forward, what role should the borough play in handling the COVID-19 fallout in Kodiak's small business sector?
Yeah, thank you. I believe the borough last spring at the last meeting I had attended had looked at the CARES Act money and looked at how to apply that to help support some of our local businesses in the community. I think that it's in our interest to continue to support those local businesses, whether that's through grants or waivers or extensions on whether that's taxes due, rent due for borough buildings. And I think we need to be ready to be embracing this for the long haul. Like I think that we're just getting started again. And I think we're gonna face challenging times on top of the challenging times we're already facing. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Thank you. I think that the borough can play an important role in several aspects. One is staying informed as to what the mandates are, and also staying in the loop as far as the state discussions that may be changing the mandate. So basically, understanding the mandates and also keeping a finger on the pulse of what might be happening with mandates that would impact small businesses. If we do that, then the borough is in a better position to advocate. So there may be times where we clearly see that a potential mandate, it may not be, we don't think it's necessary, it's going to have a huge impact on businesses. We can reach out to the state and advocate on behalf of the community. And I think the borough can also play a really valuable role in helping facilitate collaboration and cooperation at a community-wide level. So one example is testing, and I'll use the fish processing plants, with some of the new mandates coming down from the state, there were requirements as far as testing, and the borough and the city working together on the ESC could really help facilitate multiple medical providers having conversation with multiple processing plants instead of just saying, okay, it's up to, you know, Canna, go talk to Trident. Because there's a role municipal government can play that can bring people to the table in a fairly neutral way. And I think actually that's a really powerful role that is unique to municipal government. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy.
Actually, I think the borough has already done some great things in this arena. Assemblyman Turner served on the Kodiak Economic Task Force, which was set up as an advisory task force to the Emergency Operations Center, actually to the Emergency Services Council back in March. I was on that, and that was we set up a website to help get that information out to Kodiak people as those mandates changed, and we stayed tuned to Governor's Dunleavy's updates almost daily, updating that website so that people would know. The borough, I think, in supporting that, does a really good job of getting information out. With the manager on the Emergency Services Council, I think that he was able to relay the needs of the borough if they were different than the ones that were coming from the city manager. So I think that some of that had been covered very well. The businesses were left scrambling, and I think that the borough did a good job when they stepped up and gave a portion of their CARES Act money to be distributed as grants to the businesses. And again, touching back on the nonprofits, that was really helpful. So as we move forward, I feel like the borough should continue watching those mandates and participating when they can financially to helping those businesses succeed and staying active in the ESC so those mandates can be watched and businesses can be updated. I think partnering with the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce and disseminating that information is very useful as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie?
Yeah, thank you. I think it is important moving forward that the borough stay engaged and informed. As an assembly member, I I proactively attended state and federal COVID teleconference briefings throughout the pandemic, and to the best of my ability, researched and studied the CARES Act funding criteria. I also circulated information on COVID-19 disaster relief funding to individuals, businesses, and outlying communities. I helped identify their needs and concerns during that shutdown. As an assembly member, I will continue these practices and strive to assist businesses and individuals throughout Kodiak. I think it's important that the borough stay current and informed, but also ensure that the business owners are current and informed.
Thank you.
All right, I have the last question of the day. All right, given that Kodiak is a small community, smallish relative community, and it's likely that any given assembly member may have a conflict of interest as the assembly determines policy and budgetary matters. So how do you intend to be an effective assembly member given any conflicts of interest you may have? And we will start with Jeff.
Thank you. I think the first thing I would look into is and get an opinion on is, if elected, is do I have a conflict of interest as I work for the Kodiak Island Borough School District, and the borough's primary responsibility is funding education. So I would certainly want to get an opinion on that before I'd weigh in on those matters. If that was found to be true, I do believe that my background in education in this community for the last 24 years certainly lends powerful insight to the discussion that the assembly has, and certainly gives a connection between the assembly and the borough and the school district that hasn't always been consistent and hasn't always happened, and I think is far long overdue, having that consistency there. So I do believe I can lend to those discussions, but I would have to wait to see about an opinion whether there is a conflict of interest there or not. Other than that, I think the only conflict I have is my sense of caring for our community. So, and that's what motivates me to be here tonight. Thank you.
Okay, and Rebecca.
Thank you. So being on the assembly when issues have come up where I've had a conflict, pursuant to the conflict of interest provisions we have in our code and decisions made by the presiding officer, I either, stepped out of the discussion because I had a conflict, or if it was ruled I didn't have a conflict, I participated. I do think we are a small community, but it is important that that we have consistency, and that the assembly and the public don't perceive that there might be bias or there might be a conflict of interest. And maintaining that integrity is really important. Being in a position where I have stepped out of discussion because I've had a conflict, I'm not opposed to doing that. And I agree that it is important to understand what the assembly or the borough rules are and clearly understand whether you have a conflict or not. I think that's number one. If you do have a conflict, then you go from there and you follow the rules that we have set as a borough. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Amy.
Thank you. As Rebecca pointed out, I think that the borough has these rules in place and that they're easy to follow. One of the most recent incidents I saw at a borough assembly meeting was when the borough assembly was deciding whether or not to awarden a contract to Island Trails Network to make some trail improvements out to Sultry Cove. Andy Schroeder, being the executive director of Island Trails Network, literally got up out of his seat, walked out into the hallway until that discussion was done and it was voted on and someone went out and got him. So I think that those processes are already set clear. So if I'm ever involved in a conflict of interest, I would just do the same, just excusing yourself why that matter is discussed and voted on, and then when it's done, come back in. Thanks.
Thank you. And Julie.
Yeah, thank you. So this topic seems simple on the surface, but I think it's very important to provide assurances to the public that they can trust the process. I think there's a major difference between a clear conflict of interest and an appearance of a conflict of interest. And as an individual assembly member, I take it upon myself to really think through those situations. And I strongly feel that for myself, it's important to voice openly when I feel like there's an appearance of a conflict as well as a true conflict, and have the mayor rule on it. Even if he doesn't excuse me because it's just an appearance, I want the public to know that I'm highly aware of that. One instance that happened just recently was when we had a discussion on the kelp farm. And one of our vessels is tendering for the company that was involved in that discussion. And so there really is an appearance of conflict if I'm kind of semi-employed, even though I'm an independent contractor with that company. And the mayor did rule that I had a conflict, and so I stepped out. I think that's really important to voice it and to accept the ruling from the mayor. And I will continue to do that going forward. And I also think that it's important if other individual assembly members see or perceive a conflict, that they have a discussion either with the other assembly member or with the mayor, so that that can be taken care of prior to a meeting, and the proceedings can go on in a appropriate manner. Thank you.
Okay, and the last word goes to Alex.
Yes, as my fellow borough assembly members mentioned, there are protocols, and if I do have a clear conflict, I would step down out of the room. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the question segment of our forum. We will move ahead to closing statements, which we'll do in alphabetical order. So, Julie, your closing statement, please.
All right, thank you. I just want to say that I want to repeat that I have the same reasons for running for re-election as I did running for election 3 years ago. Maintaining a stable tax rate is the top priority. I think that it'll be hard to do, that if you ask the question, will my taxes remain stable, I can't promise you that, but a stable tax rate will remain my priority. I also talked about simplifying government through consolidation and code simplification, and I think that through research and providing answers and streamlining code, that is possible. And also I talked about transparency in the process, and I think that it's important that we value the availability of information and individuals so the public can be assured of a fair and just process. I'd appreciate your vote on or before October 2nd. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex?
Yes, if I'm voted on the borough assembly, I tend to hold a high integrity and have open communication with both the public and fellow members on the assembly. Especially strategizing a new budget. There's a lot of research to do on the stuff. Some things can be cut, maybe some things can't. And I congratulate everybody for being here, and I appreciate learning a little about each and every one of you here. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff?
I'll keep it very brief. I would just say in my professional career, I've had experience in having difficult conversations, valuing relationships, listening for understanding, and being able to work with others. I think that's a skill set that I offer this assembly. I'm not afraid to keep asking questions if I need to be educated. I think this evening I learned there's a lot that I need to learn, and that's not why I'm asking you to vote for me. I think I'm asking you to vote for me because of the skills that I bring to this assembly. I'm not afraid to make the unpopular decisions that are in the best interest of our island community. And I believe I possess the ability to look at things from and weigh multiple perspectives. So I would appreciate your vote on the 6th. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Thanks. I'm sitting here laughing because I couldn't read directions and thought I had 2 minutes for the opening statement, so I had half of it left. If anyone wants to know what I was going to say, feel free to give me a call. So I do take responsibility when I screw up. So I do want to thank the Kodiak Daily Mirror and KMXT for putting together this forum, and special thanks to Mike Wall, Jared Griffin, and Andrew Kennison. I found this forum really useful. It was good to get to know more about the other candidates. And my biggest issue is we have this huge budget situation, but that doesn't mean that we can stop taking care of the borough's day-to-day business and address issues that we need to as they come up. So I do ask for your vote on October 6th or earlier if you take advantage of early voting here at the Borough Building. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy?
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for coming out tonight. From what I saw the presidential debate earlier, I'm very happy that this forum went quite a bit smoother than that. It appears to me that the voters have some really great choices when it comes to the assembly election this year, and I hope everyone listening was able to find some voices that they're able to connect with. If you see a need for better communication, stronger collaboration with other government entities, and having a candidate that is approachable, I'd appreciate your vote on October 6th. Or Rebecca Soul, my thunder. Early voting is open. You can vote in the Borough Assembly Chambers Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4:30 all the way through October 5th. So if you have time between now and the 5th, you can go ahead and get your voting done. I've had a lot of people tell me that they're already out voting, so I think that's great. I'd love to see some higher numbers this year than we usually get for an assembly election. So thanks to the moderators, and thanks for tuning in tonight.
Thank you. That concludes the Borough Assembly Candidate Forum. Thank you, Julie, Alex, Jeff, Rebecca, Amy, for participating. Mike?
Okay. In conclusion, you'll probably notice if you were with us the whole time that we somehow lost Mr. Delgado, who was on a Zoom link and was having some issues with the weather, so he wasn't able to participate tonight. We do have a candidate statement from him, conveying his regrets and telling everyone he's thankful for the opportunity to run. So he's looking forward to the chance to help create a livable, stable, self-sustaining community that uses all resources available to get us out of this unprecedented time, and believes we have great employees at the borough, and thanks you all and wishes you all a fine evening. That's from Joseph Delgado, who could not appear. Also, earlier we read a message from Sandra Katelnikoff Lester, who's recovering from surgery and couldn't appear tonight. With that, thanks to all the candidates for participating in the candidate forum tonight. Thank you to our audience here in the chambers and to those who tuned in at home on KMXT or through the Borough's website. Election day is Tuesday, October 6th. Get to know your candidates and the issues. Then take a few minutes on October 6th to cast your vote. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your participation. Have a good evening.